All right, this is Phil Salter. Welcome to No Better Time. Today's episode is really, I'm really excited about. It's really cool to see these episodes that because I went through a string of interviewing a lot of people, like multiple in a day for multiple days a week. a few weeks ago. And I'm kind of still doing, at least weekly interviews, so I can kind of have a backlog of interviews. But it's really exciting to see these interviews starting to come out that I've been really excited about. A couple things I wanted to bring up. First of all, in my last episode, I kind of recorded on a whim on a porch of this rental Airbnb my family was at for this reunion, and the sound quality is super quiet, and so I apologize for that. But also, there's a moment in the episode where I have to sneeze, and I didn't realize that. To me, I thought, oh, it'll just be kind of weird and funny. I'm just going to roll with it because I'm on my phone. It's going to be a hassle to go through and edit this thing like I normally would, at least do some kind of light editing at the very least. I was playing it because I was talking about my nephew and playing horse with him, basketball, the game horse, and kind of some lessons I learned from that, and just in believing yourself and changing that inner dialogue and then what we tell ourselves as far as our ability to succeed. And I have to sneeze, and it sounds like really awkward and uncomfortable and inappropriate, if you will. And I was playing it back for my sister and her son and some of my other siblings, and everyone got really uncomfortable in that moment. And I was like, what was that? And I was like, oh, I had to sneeze. And so anyways, I've been debating if I should take down the episode altogether or not. But if you do listen to that, let's all be adults here. We know that I was trying to sneeze, and that's what it was. So if we can agree upon that, then maybe I'll leave it up. But in general, it's kind of a rough episode in that it's hard to hear anyways, so maybe no one will even hear what I was doing. It was really awesome. Jordan Mazziotti was my guest this time. He's a marketer, a creative director, graphic designer, freelancer, full-time employee. He's a lot of awesome things. Also someone who does things on the side on Etsy and other side hustles and forms of passive income that he's looking into. And that's something, if you listen to, we kind of get into his career as a graphic designer and kind of his creative process and how he learned to be passionate about it. But we go beyond that. We talk about, he gets into kind of this idea of passive income, which, I love and that I've been trying to learn as much as possible about. So listen in. It's awesome. Jordan has a really awesome perspective. He's always looking for opportunities. He's always being creative, not just in his artistic ability, but in looking at the world around him and thinking outside the box. He's a really good example of how to approach life. Really cool guy. So hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to No Better Time, a financial journey with me, Phil Salter, as I learn about finances and investing. Join me and we can grow together towards a bright financial future, because there's no better time than the present to get moving on your financial goals. All right, welcome to No Better Time. I'm Phil Salter. I'm actually here with Jordan Mazziotti, and he is an awesome, I guess, what would you call it? Was it graphic designer, marketer? You're a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Art director, creative director, graphic designer, web designer.
And owner of, yeah, a lot of things. You're very talented, and I've always been really impressed with that. And you're the owner of Mazziotti Designs, correct?
Yep.
But also you work for companies, you do freelance, and that's something that I've always really impressed me about you, and that's something that I want to talk about, and anything else as well you want to talk about. But I actually was a LinkedIn connection with you for several years now.
Long time ago.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's funny how that happens with LinkedIn. You kind of just have people you get connected to, because I was in graphic design at one point in the past.
I think at that point, we were both working for food storage companies, if I'm not mistaken. That's probably why I connected with you.
Yeah, that's right. And then it's funny, we ended up working for the same company at one point, and you were the designer there, which was like, oh, and I was like, dude, you look so familiar. Like, I made the connection because I'd seen your posts of your cool stuff you've done, and then we knew each other for real. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining, by the way. And
The thing I reached out to you for specifically was I wanted to talk about how you kind of manage freelancing, and it's something you do a lot of, at least I know in the past. I don't know if it's right. kind of ebbed and flowed, or if you've put more focus sometimes and other times, and maybe sometimes you've wanted to back off, but kind of what's your story there? What got you really into design and all that in the first place?
Yeah. So like my initial design, like back in like the '90s in middle school, like I got really into like just studying graffiti. I know that's probably a weird way to start, but like, I just was like enthralled by like high end graffiti, just the style, the artistic value of it, like what techniques they use. So like when I was in like seventh, eighth grade, I would just hand draw like graffiti on pieces of paper, like during school, when I got home, and just kind of started that with that. And then that kind of evolved from just like copying graffiti styles on paper to like just hand drawing names, and then like studying fonts. Like I'd go to the library and go to like the font sites that they had back then. And back then it was like way different than it is now. And I would just scroll through them and just like study them and like be like, that's a cool font. I'm going to draw my name in that font, or I'm going to draw my favorite sports team in that font. And I would print pages and pages of just font styles. And then I'd go and try to recreate them hand, like by hand. That just kind of evolved. Like I drew like realistic stuff here and there, but like my focus was like really just drawing like logos per se. Back then I didn't know that if that's what I was really doing, but like I just kind of focused on that. And then like kids at school would be like, hey, that's awesome, can you draw my name? I'll be like, yeah, sure, $5. So I started like my little like middle school, high school side hustle of just like drawing people's names in really cool ways and selling it to them. And
so you were an entrepreneur from the beginning there. Like you saw an opportunity, which I think not everyone always does. I was talking to my brother last night, and he's like, there's opportunities all around us, infinite opportunities. But I guess if you're the kind of person who notices that and sees what it is and says, hey, that's a business opportunity. And you saw that at what, like in fifth grade, you said, or something like that?
Seventh, eighth, ninth grade is when I started. So middle school.
That's cool.
And I mean, and it's weird because like years later, I'd run into someone from high school, middle school, be like, dude, I was cleaning my room the other day. I was like cleaning my childhood room, and I found that drawing you drew for me, and I still love it.
That's
awesome.
I didn't
throw it away, and I still keep it. So it was kind of cool to be just like, the early beginnings of design and entrepreneurship. So it's
the original Fiverr, man. You might have feelings about Fiverr.
Yeah, I it's interesting because I'm almost seeing them changing, and I can talk more about like kind of my upcoming thoughts about like side hustles and stuff. But I think the perception with Fiverr is starting to change a little bit, I think.
For the positive or for the negative?
Yeah, I think for the positive.
Oh, so do you feel positively about Fiverr?
I did like years ago, I did like a bunch of really small, like gigs on Fiverr, and, it was like really $5 gigs and stuff. And, I think I made like $500 on just app icons. It was really like one gig, and it was like years ago. And then I just like lost interest and felt like it was a little degrading at that point. But
yeah, it
changed so much.
It takes time, right?
Yeah. And I think they've changed a lot where it's not just $5 anymore. You can set your prices, and you can like set hourly wages and stuff. And it's a lot more, I think it's a lot more advantageous to creatives now than it used to be. And I've seen people like, I've heard of people making tens of thousands of dollars a month on it. Like,
wow.
Their full-time jobs are on there, and they're like just crazy. There's this girl on TikTok, and she just pushes it, but she's like the first like millionaire off of Fiverr.
Wow.
Writing. It's crazy. So.
Yeah, because obviously, like, it's not all just $5 things. It's you can really have like bigger packages. That's kind of like a starting
sell
point.
Websites, but it, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Not to sidetrack, but I just thought, I didn't know how someone like you that does this for freelance and who really values your time, right? And this is a very specialized skill. And to say, hey, anything that I do is worth only $5. Of course not, right? You're an artist and you're a professional. So how did it kind of grow from there then? You know, you're in high school, and then where to go from there?
From there, like I just continued doing it, and then I found out that like there was graphic design you did on the computer, and you know, and then I was just like, in high school I took some like classes that kind of really rudimentary back in the day type Photoshop type classes, didn't really know what I was doing, didn't look that great, but just kind of fed onto it, still drew, still maintained mm-hmm. that thing. And then in the college, when I went to my first year of college, that kind of was the first introduction to like design programs. That was like in 1999. I mean, I think the current design industry, you were still in the relative infant days of Adobe and, mm-hmm. You know, Quark and stuff like that back then. So I look back at my first year of college stuff and it was bad.
Well, isn't that how it should be though, right? As we grow our skills, like if we don't look back and say, maybe even 6 months ago, but definitely years ago, if we don't look back and say, wow, that was pretty bad, I'm much better, then it's right. We should maybe look at ourselves and say, are we improving enough?
Didn't even do a four-year program or anything. I did a two-year program at Eagle Gate College, which is now like strictly a nursing school, so which is weird.
Oh really? Did you find that beneficial to do a program? I'm assuming it was in like graphic design or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was it some kind of accreditation that came with it, or was it like a two-year degree?
Yeah, I mean,
like
I got my associate's degree.
Okay.
So it was a two-year program, but like at the time it was just like, I didn't find a lot of advantage to go into a four-year program for design. Mm. I felt like getting the skills quick and then getting out in the job market was much more valuable than just like languishing for 4 years, I had to take some generals at the trade mm-hmm. school, but like it was like middle school math and stuff. So I really could focus on like learning the design and stuff rather than just like languishing in generals mm-hmm. for years. And so I got my first, I actually did a year, took a break to move up to Logan with my wife so she could get her master's degree. And I got my first job with like a year certificate and started working. And so I felt like that worked out for you. Quicker head start. And like I could get into the design industry when I was still pretty infant in my learning process.
And in retrospect, do you feel like, hey, man, that was the right move?
I think so, because I was able to get in design a lot earlier. And then like, mm-hmm. I mean, 4 year universities have their advantage of like, getting some extra growth and stuff, but I feel like in my first 2 years of being an actual designer, I learned a lot more than I could in the 2 years that I was at a university.
Oh yeah, I definitely don't doubt that. It seems like it accelerates. I found once I was out of college, learning accelerated for me and the things I was really trying to specialize in. So that's cool. And along the way, were you always doing freelance work, kind of finding things you could do for people?
Yeah, I would say that I probably started doing freelance kind of from the get-go. Like I would just find opportunities, even if they were like contests or like just like I think my first like true freelance project was when we were living up in Logan. We lived in the married housing, and they needed a new logo for like the housing. They needed a new logo for apparel for the housing. And they had a bunch of people submit, and I was like, oh, cool. I'll submit this. And I won, and my stuff was on hoodies and stuff. And I was like, wow, I think that's kind of what hooked me. And then I would just kind of look for opportunities wherever I could. To kind of be like, hey, do you need something? You know, however bad I was at that point. But I think it definitely helped me improve, like, besides just what I was doing at my jobs at that point. So
yeah. And then did you find that there was times where it was hard to say no to things as they came to you, that even if maybe you thought, oh, that's not something I'm interested in, or that might be too big or too small, is saying no hard?
Right. And, like, I think when I really started diving in was like after we moved away from Logan and I was back down in Salt Lake, I was hitting Craigslist hard. And I wasn't just hitting it locally, I was hitting it nationally. So I would go, and this was like in the heyday of Craigslist when everybody was using it for like everything. I would post an ad like all over the country and I would get requests all over and they were so weird. But one I did accept, I did design a flyer for like an escort service one time. I didn't really realize what it was until I was like partway through it. I'm like,
they said, oh, like, that's what this is.
Photography and like, great. I'll just finish this off, take my money. And if you message me back later, I think I'll pass. But yeah, it's just like some like, it was just like, yeah, you take those, you learn what to take, you learn not what to take. And then the request you get in, you're like, does this sound cool? Or is like, it's against my ethics? Because definitely I've had to reject freelance projects that were against my ethics, like plenty of times. But I think that's important too, to set a code of ethics for yourself when you're doing freelance, to make sure that like design stuff you like that you can support, not illegal and appropriate, inappropriate type of thing. So
something you can stand behind, right?
Right. So, yeah. Definitely. So like if someone asks you like, did you design that? You're like, yep, proudly. And so,
yeah. And that's going to be different for everybody, right? Like we all have different moral codes and some people, and that's fine for sure. What I'm wondering about is, when you started like deciding what your time was worth, how much to charge people. And I'm sure in the beginning, or was there a time, I guess, where you said, you know what, I'm not charging enough. And it was kind of scary to kind of maybe go to a repeat customer and say, hey, I'm actually raising my prices. You know, did that ever happen to you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I first started, I was a little more on the desperate side, but I always like, I had always done enough research where I was like, I can't do freelance for the same amount that I'm making at my entry level or junior level graphic design job. You know, it's like, I can't charge a freelance client, hey, I'll charge you $12.50 or whatever. You know, early on in your career, you get paid bones. And so like, I always felt like my freelance time was more valuable than my daytime.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So like, I always tried to, you know, at least in the beginning, I always tried to charge double what I was making at my day job. And, you know, at times that still was like $20, $25. And then, you know, as that grew, I kind of coincided them a lot of the time. When I got up to $20 an hour, I was charging 40 freelance. And, I mean, that over the years, and as you know, as you get more into your career, your base wages and your day jobs, they get higher. So they've kind of almost met in the middle a little bit. I have continued to try to raise it for new clients, especially. And with freelance, you read your customer a lot of the time. So like, if you see a customer that, you know, you can't charge $60, $70, $80 an hour for, you know, you'd be like, okay, I'll take a little bit of a hit on this because they're a client from the beginning, or, you know, they're a small business that's getting their foot off the ground. So you sometimes do a little bit of that adjustment, but
I like that, kind of having some type of formula to go with. And it's a little more clear in the beginning, 'cause it's like lower amounts. And then you definitely want to respect your time, but also go with your gut. I think you say sometimes you think, 'cause you could be really stubborn and say, you know what, I feel like I could take a little less for this arts project I'm maybe really excited about. And so I could take a little less because they seem like a really cool client that isn't, you know, starting out, and kind of go with your gut. Yeah.
Right. Cool. 'Cause I'm like, even from those early days, I still have clients today that I work with from 10, 12, 13 years ago. And I've adjusted those prices. Like you mentioned, like I've had to like slowly creep them up. It's like, hey, times have changed. I need to charge you a little bit more. Most of the time, you do it a slow amount, and then they're usually pretty good with it. But like, they're still on board. I still do work every year for them. Mm-hmm. And, for example, I design. I have a client that I've been with since, I want to say, like 2009, and we designed officially licensed footballs for the college football championship and the Super Bowl, and now we're doing Final Four basketball. But I've been with him the whole time, and you know, we've grown together, and like every year I get ready and design my Super Bowl footballs in January and have to watch the games as research. But
nice.
But it's something like I never would have known or thought like that many years ago, this one client just would have stayed with me the whole time, and like we're in like a first name friendship relationship. And you know, I've been down to San Diego before. We like met up and had lunch and stuff. So it's really cool.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show. That's really good. And I think in those kind of relationships, if you don't charge as much, if you chose not to, of course, it can make sense too, right? To maintain those long-term relationships. Because I think that's one reason why when you're giving your personal time outside of regular business hours, it is more valuable time. It's less time you can spend with your family or to recuperate. It's worth more than just whatever you're making in a day. And also it might just be a one-time thing. So it's like, hey, I work for a company, they pay me this, but consistently this many hours every week. That's why it's a discounted rate, if you will. But if it's these long-term relationships, it makes sense to kind of decide what makes sense to keep that going. That's cool, man. I think that, like I said, for me, you're like an example of someone who just really puts themselves out there and like hustles. And you even mentioned something that you might had some other things you wanted to bring up as far as like things you're doing. But
yeah, there's some interesting developments over the last couple of years too, with some long-term freelance clients that I've had. So mm-hmm. I worked with you at GoReact for, I don't know how you were there for a year and a half, 2 years while I was there. An interesting development that happened after is I had been working for a company called Legal Shield for like 3.5 years, just on the side while I was working at GoReact.
Mm.
Like my biggest freelance client, it was essentially, they probably took up 75% of my freelance at that point, which was like great and awesome. I actually got hired by them full time. Just like they're like, hey, we're hiring full time. You've been with us for 3.5 years. It's an art director position. And, you know, so that's a huge advantage to freelance as well.
Mm.
It's because I feel like it gives you the opportunity not to necessarily betray your job, but it gives you the options that like those relationships that you build can be much bigger than just that freelance relationship. Really at that time, like I got laid off right before the pandemic, and it was like, I was like, what am I going to do? And they came in. Essentially seamless. I had all branding. I didn't have to go through that awkward like first 6 months where you're like, what the heck is this company about? It's perfect.
It's really best for both of you guys, huh? Because like you know them, you know what they're about. They know what you're about. You know, it's a great opportunity for both of you.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then I had a development happen earlier this year where I had this guy that I did freelance for like 10 years, just in companies that he started or worked for. And so this year he actually, he hired me on part-time, like as an employee. They were essentially my freelance client, but essentially it's like, hey, we want you to be on board. We don't want you full-time because we know you still have a full job, but as the freelance client, they're like, we want to put you on payroll. We want you to have the benefits of being an employee. But they were my freelance client for 10 years. So two of my largest freelance clients are now accounting for like 65 hours worth of work every week of solid, like reliable pay.
Yeah. So like you have a schedule with them, it sounds like, right? Like you have this. Yeah. That's amazing.
So it's like, I it made it so like during the pandemic and like with any kind of changes that might happen in like my spouse's jobs or something, I have that security because I built those freelance relationships over a long term, the long term, that it essentially benefited me and gave me the security that I needed to continue on during like a crazy time in the world.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm so happy to see that you're doing so awesome.
I mentioned to you when we were chatting about this interview, like some other things in the fire, like I don't know. I don't know if you watch a lot of TikTok, but there is like so much side hustle. There's like a whole section of TikTok that is just like side hustle central. I don't know if you've ever.
No, I'm very new to it.
It's really, really interesting because you've got your normal TikTok, your booty shaking and like your dancing.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
The jokey and the pranky stuff, all this superficial crap. But when you get down into it, if you can like get into side hustle TikTok, is how they phrase like their subgenres of TikTok, it has completely changed my perception on what you can do as an entrepreneur, especially like me. My new job that I got last year at Legal Shield, it's fully remote. Like they're based in Oklahoma. I'll go to their office. I don't know. Maybe never. I don't know. Everything wow. is. I mean, it would be cool, you know, cool to go to Oklahoma or whatever. But I work at home. That's my life there. Like we have employees all over the country and we're all remote. So during that time, I've got on this TikTok, this side hustle TikTok that has really changed my perception on what you can do doing other things. And it doesn't, and it's kind of opened my eyes to even non-design side hustles, which is like, and before I'd be like, I'm going to do design hustles. I'm going to design websites on WordPress. I'm going to do print work and, you know, all that stuff, where it's completely changed my perception of what you can do.
I mean, I feel like I need something more, man. Like you're saying if I were to go do hashtag side hustle, I'd see this whole world of people doing things. Or because are you learning how to?
So many things you can do. It's insane because it's just like, I've got a side hustle that, I mean, it branched off of design and I am not making a ton of money on it right now, but Etsy, for example, I designed a poster for my son for his bedroom, a superhero poster. Mm-hmm. I put it on Etsy like 18 months ago. And that one non-monetary designed poster has made me over $1,800 on Etsy.
Wow.
With like no real investment. Like the initial investment wasn't even to do that. And then growing that, like, I've designed a bunch of other stuff and put it on there. And, you know, I made it like $3,000 or $4,000 off of Etsy, just kind of just playing around and not even really taking it seriously, going after like the strategy of like keywords and ads and really like pushing like events of the year. Cause you can like really push Etsy to like focus on like the holidays that are happening, Mother's Day, Valentine's Day. I haven't even done that. So that's like my next step with that side hustle is kind of focus on like the strategy part of it.
Yeah.
You can make, these people are making tens of thousands of dollars a month on just side hustles on Etsy. Things as simple as like digital downloads.
Yeah.
Like drop shipping on Etsy.
So they're using TikTok to promote the things on Etsy. Is that where it comes? Yeah. TikTok comes into play.
Yeah. Oh, for that particular side hustle. And they're teaching you strategies on how to like do it. So, cause there's like this one guy, he does print on demand jewelry. And, he's making like, he does a lot of ads, but he's making like $30,000 of profit, like a month.
Wow.
On Etsy selling jewelry. It's insane.
I think that that's interesting because this whole idea that I've been really trying to learn more about is passive income. And like,
yeah, that's like my whole thing right now.
It's like you call this a side hustle, but when I hear the word side hustle, I associate it with like working really hard, grinding, going, right? But not necessarily always the case. You could create some kind of asset. There is, with any passive income, there's at least some initial effort to get something set up.
Right.
Right. Nothing's going to be without effort at all, or at least some kind of capital or something that you put to it. So you have this skill, you create something, you post it on there, and then money starts coming in. You do that more and more, money comes in, right? More passive income. So that's awesome. So it's like what kind of you're looking to do is get more out there. And as you realize, oh, this actually works. If I strategize even further, you know, time my things right, market a little bit, or do whatever you said, like keywords, like, oh, this could even become more passive income. And the more you automate this stuff, the more passive it becomes, right? But that's that's amazing.
My goal is I would love to be able to replace my wife's entire income with just doing something as simple as like Etsy. Like get 1,000 products on a store or have 5 different stores that sell, you know, $1,000 a month. And then my wife doesn't have to work anymore. You know, it'd be amazing. You know, and I mean, that's not the only, like, it's like I said, if you just go through that, like a huge affiliate marketing, community on TikTok that has like taught me a ton. I haven't officially started that one. I'm still kind of in the education process of that one. But you know, I need to learn the skills of using, you know, sales funnels and, you know, like email automation and all that stuff. So,
you know, so you're saying, but if you're going on TikTok
that will just naturally make me a better businessman too. Learning side hustles. And it will
but you're learning this stuff. You're learning this stuff on TikTok is what you're saying. Like you're seeing videos where they're like, hey, try this. Okay. Interesting. I really want to look into this because I want to
use that as a tool. It's literally like 3/4 of my For You page on TikTok is all like side hustles and passive income. And some of it's Farsi.
Interesting.
Some of it's money grab and some, you know, so you have to take some of it with a grain of salt, but like it's taught me so much and kind of motivated me to like kind of move in a, keep my design and have that still maintained, but find ways where I don't have to spend, you know, 15, 20 hours a week designing stuff for people. I can spend 2 or 3 hours, maybe match what I'm making freelance wise. Like have a little more balance.
Yeah, I think that's huge. That's the biggest difference. Obviously, the benefit of passive income is we don't have it, like, frees up our time. We don't have to actively be doing things. It's not like, hey, an hour of my time creates this much profit or whatever. There's not that 1-to-1 ratio, which is awesome. So, not to mean you have to then throw away all the other things that work too. It's just let's add to it, you know. So
yeah, you always hear it's like, how do you become a billionaire? You become a millionaire not by working a 9-to-5 job. You become a millionaire by diversifying all of your like money creation avenues. You know, you try to. They always talk about income streams, and millionaires become millionaires because they have, you know, 7 to 10 income streams. So that's kind of my goal too. Is like, you know, keep my design, love it, love my day job, but let's find those avenue streams that are passive and take our financial freedom to the next level, which I definitely need.
Me too. I'm with you. Like that's why I started this podcast, is to learn all the things that I could be doing that I haven't been doing, and saying, hey, it doesn't matter how old I am and if I would have started then, where I'd be now. It's like, what can I do today? As in, like, no better time than the present, right? Is the idea to get started on something. And that's cool. I'm going to look into this whole side of TikTok where you can learn the stuff about side hustle, passive income.
And hopefully you get on the algorithm where it doesn't give you a bunch of stupid crap.
Because I'm very new to it, because I was like, hey, maybe I could use it to like promote my podcast, you know, post some clips of my interviews or whatever. But it's a pretty cool platform to create too, though, I found, more than other things. The tools are very strong for creating content, which I like a lot.
Yeah, because I even like one side hustle I've started, but it's just hard to maintain, is Amazon affiliates, where you're essentially affiliate marketer for Amazon. So I got on their program and I started doing videos. And you know how that works is they go on your video, you put a link in your link tree or your bio, you know, your links bio. And then they click on it, they go to Amazon. If they purchase something after clicking on your link, they don't have to purchase what you link them to. But if that cookie remains, anything they buy on Amazon, you get like a kickback for. But Amazon, so that's kind of what I started. That's kind of my first side hustle that I kind of started. I actually got a couple of videos that got like 50, 70, 80,000 views. And
like review videos or?
Yeah, just review videos of stuff I bought from Amazon, just because I bought it. And so I had it already, and I just started reviewing stuff that I already bought. I mean, I didn't make a ton of money. And then their program is like, you have to have a social following. So I had a social following on TikTok, but everywhere else I didn't. So they kicked me out of the program because I didn't have like 1,000 subscribers or 1,000 Instagram followers. I may go back and revisit it, but that's kind of what started me down kind of this avenue of these passive incomes. And but
yeah, and it doesn't matter if something doesn't work out, because like we learn from that experience and say, hey,
right,
this is what I liked about that. You know, I learned some cool things, but it turns out I might be able to do something else that pays better than what Amazon's willing to give me. Or, you know, you learn these skills and you start to think differently. You process the world around you differently and you recognize opportunities that you wouldn't have recognized before. So this has been a really awesome conversation. I'm going to let you get back to your day, but I just want to thank you for just your perspective. It's just kind of, it's so funny how we start to learn things and how things connect. And then all of a sudden you're bringing up things I just barely been thinking about. And it's just like really cool.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I really appreciate it. So is there like a website, anything that anybody who would wanted to learn more about your design or what you do or your TikTok handle or whatever?
Yeah. So my graphic design website is Mazziotti, M-A-Z-Z-I-O-T-T-I design.com. I also have a web only address now. So like when I'm focusing on web only clients, that's jmazdigital.com. And that name was given to me.
This with two Z's, right? Jmaz?
Yep. Jamazzdigital.com. That nickname was given to me by the lovely people at GoReact.
And, nice.
I was known strictly by that. There.
So. To the point that I had to ask you, how do you pronounce your last name when we got on this call? Because I
people had to ask me what my first name was.
Yeah.
Got to that point where new employees didn't even know what my first name was there. It was, I was just J-Maz all the time. So
such J A M A Z Z, right?
Or jmazzdigital.com and then Mazziotti.
All right. Awesome. Thanks again for your time. And just for anyone who wants to, if they have questions for Jordan, you can email me at nobettertime.podcast@gmail.com. If you go to anchor.fm/nobettertime, you can even leave a voice message about your thoughts or questions. And if there's anything you have, I can forward it to Jordan. Thanks for listening and keep pushing and look for those opportunities around you because they are there. Just open your mind and notice and take risks and be willing to fail. All right. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening. You can support the No Better Time podcast by going to anchor.fm/nobettertime and selecting the support button. But the best support you can give is by listening and engaging. I want to hear from you. Send your thoughts, questions, and topic ideas to nobettertime.podcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave a voice message by going to anchor.fm/nobettertime and clicking the message button just below the podcast description. Please subscribe wherever you listen and rate and review if that's an option. Check out the video version of the podcast on YouTube by searching No Better Time Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe there as well. And if this episode would help someone, don't forget to share it with them and let them know about the podcast.